Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Tass in Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. We are doing a cup of soup or bowl all next week for our charity series of feeding some folks here in the community. If you're coming out, make sure you bring some canned goods. Say hello. We'll be doing it from noon until 5. Five different locations, starting at Costitz. All of it brought to you by our friends at Wise Markets, as well as our friends at the Maryland Lottery. And I will have some Magic 8-Ball scratch-offs to give away, which I think is good. Number 8 with Lamar Jackson and all that. So I've been doing my residue. I'm not going to the Super Bowl in New Orleans. Been there, done that, held the parade, wrote the book, held the trophy, did all of that stuff. Many moons ago. But in lieu of that, this week we're getting around. We're talking all sorts of folks. Joe Flacco joined us this week, Jamal Lewis, in advance of the big Verizon party they're having down at the stadium next week on Super Bowl Sunday. This is a guy that, much like me for much of my career, at least now covering the Detroit Lions, and he has been on that beat for better or worse for a better part of 2 decades. I was also an NFL Pro Football Hall of Fame voter on NFL history. But Dave Burkett joins us. I see you at owners' meetings and combines and Super Bowls and all of these years. This was the year you had to sort of like leave next week open just in case because you didn't have a lot of those years with the Lions on this beat. It's good to have you aboard, of course, of the Detroit Free Press. You can find his work, Birkett, anywhere. Social media travels. A good year to be a Lions historian, I would say, if I call you that, right?
No doubt. I actually wrote a book this year. I know you've been down that road, and it was about Lions history, and it was turned out to be a great year for it to come out, sort of a little coffee table book, and got a great reception from Lions fans because the team was so positive this year. And like you said, I go to the Super Bowl. I don't know what this is, probably 15 straight years now, but never have had the home team in it, of course. Thought they might get there this year. They fell a little bit short against the Washington Commanders, but hey, maybe next year for the Lions.
Well, look, the Schwartzes and Megatron and sort of early to middling Stafford, you probably had to put a couple of those aside for a couple of years, right?
Well, I mean, they had a good team in 2011, but that was a year when, they were very young. So I don't think anyone ever thought they were legit Super Bowl contenders. They struggled in 2012, only went, I think they went 4-12, if I remember right. So disappointing year. And then, like, 2014 was Jim was gone by then, but they had a really good defense. Didn't quite think they had the goods to get to the Super Bowl. It wasn't a team like this year that you looked at and you said, man, one of the best, most well-rounded rosters in the NFL. They had some really good players, but wasn't quite to this level. So different vibe here in Detroit because for sure, for the first time in a long time, really last year, but this regime, I guess, for the first time in a long time, people are, bought in completely, believing that this is a team that might finally get it done.
I think of you as one of the young guys. I think you're younger than me. I'm pretty sure. I'm 56, and I've kidded around with the pro football voters here, but nobody's seen more football than me, covered more football than me. I covered 27 Super Bowls before I was thrown out 3 years ago. And you even saw me at the owners' meeting some 9 months ago, chasing them around because this is what I do. Joe Flacco said to me this week, "I don't know how to do anything else but do this." I'm sort of in the same boat 33 years into this. You're on the Hall of Fame committee now. Give me your back. Did you grow up in Detroit like a kid of Barry Sanders and Billy Sims and Eric Hipple and Gary Danielson? I watched all that from afar. They weren't very good. I mean, the Wayne Fonts team, I remember the Redskins a lot. I was on the radio when the Redskins played the Lions. That's how long I've been on the radio when they played that championship blowout game down at RFK. I think about all of the years and all of the stuff that's going on there. These are the glory years in Detroit, even though nothing's happened. I mean, Plimpton aside, right?
Yeah, I mean, that most people have been alive for at least, right? The 50s were certainly the glory years. They won a few championships there, but most people don't have any recollection of that. I grew up in Detroit. Certainly like 90s were my high school and college years. So, basically spent that decade watching the Lions, grew up around the Bad Boys Pistons, that sort of era of even the 84 Tigers when they won the World
So what you're
Series.
saying is you're from Hockey Town, is what you're
Yeah,
really
nah,
telling
you
me.
know, I mean, I, but I was a basketball guy, so hockey was never really my thing. I played basketball all my life, still coach my kids in it. Basketball was kind of my sport. So
met
hockey
Eddie
wasn't
Van
really my
Halen at the
thing.
Palace at Auburn Hills, so I have a great affinity for the Bad Boys. You know what I mean? So.
That was the time to be a Pistons fan. And, I think the 90s when Barry was there, that was the time to be a Lions fan until right now. I mean, the Lions really did have some good teams there. They just, and Wayne Fonts would be the first one to tell you, as he said in the documentary, they just didn't have a quarterback that could help them get over the hump.
Well, when Schwartz took the job, and my affinity for Jimmy lingers, we're still in rock and roll touch. He told me that for it being hockey town and whatever the Tigers and Sparky Anderson, even being a good team at that point, and the Pistons in the NBA and Michigan before Jim Harbaugh got there, and when they were losing Ohio State every year, the Lions sort of rule the city, and you would never know that, but you would know that as the Free Press beat writer because you see your clicks, you see the interest level. And I think my dear friend, the Chief Information Officer, Mike Rosenfeld from Web Connection's son, lives in Detroit. He's in the tech space, and he's all of that you guys told me 20 years ago in the 06 Super Bowl. It's now 19 years ago that I was there broadcasting in the big center tower GM. But that the Lions are the biggest property there. They're the sleeping giant and all that. And I think the draft, my buddy went out to the draft with his kid, and there was a half million, it's the craziness of the draft there, that there's a thirst there, and the ticket prices for the playoff game 2 weeks ago, just an insane thirst for the Lions in a way that maybe Cleveland could bubble that way. Buffalo's bubbling that way right now. Baltimore bubbled when we lost our team. But I don't know that there's a more sleeping giant than what you sit on there and how close it all sort of is coming to maybe being fruition, maybe being all the years of saying what it could be. Maybe it is that now.
I don't know that it's sleeping anymore, but you're right. For a long time, I think people maybe valued what exactly Lions fans were and how much this team meant to the town, because it is a football town at its core. And probably right, just the grit of it and the hard work, the physicality, everything that really makes football, the game. And it's something that has always resonated here. The teams haven't always been great, but there have been great players, Barry Sanders, Calvin Johnson, right? Two of the best to ever do it. So there have been some good things to cheer about. And I think you probably see from afar now, like not just the ticket prices and the home environment, but the way Lions fans make road games their own. And it probably didn't quite happen in Baltimore last year, the 2023 season, but just about everywhere else. And maybe it didn't because of the way that
It was
game
the only
unfolded.
game where the ticket prices were a buck and a quarter, buck and a half, and they were your fans buying them.
That's right. And you look at all the other road venues that the Lions have been to. I mean, Kansas City, the first game of that 2023 season, the Chiefs are raising the banner. There's 15,000 Lions fans there ringing that stadium. So it really is, it's a great sports town, and the Lions are atop that list. There's no doubt.
Honolulu Blue for me. I guess the question for you, and I'll get the Hall of Fame, we'll do Lamar, we'll do Campbell and all that, but your history of doing this with coaches and organizations and the Ford family running it, and all the coach, I've been through five coaches, six, how many? You've been through several on the beat. I mean, I've had three since 1995, since they got off the boat. That Belichick was really the coach for 5 minutes, and then it was Marchibroda, Billick, and Harbaugh, and that's all we've had here. You've had a lot of that. What makes Dan Campbell successful in a way that my buddy Jim Schwartz couldn't be, or other people have not been able to be in that seat? And obviously, it's a good players, and all my coaches, Mike Nolan said that yesterday. Good players, good players. That's the most important thing. If you have that right, you can figure the coaching out to some degree, because if you can have all the coaches you want, if you don't have the players, you got nothing.
Well, that's true. And he and Brad Holmes have done a great job, and Brad being the guru of the draft, have done a great job building the roster and stocking it with a lot of young talent. But I think to answer your question about Dan, and there have been some other good coaches. I mean, Jim Schwartz did a good job kind of digging that thing out of 0-16, and players really respected Jim Caldwell. He didn't quite have the pizzazz that Campbell does, the grip on the city the way that Campbell does. I think what makes Dan special is just, well, there's two things. To me, to be a successful head coach in the NFL, it's more than the X's and O's, right? It's the leadership. It's what you mean in the locker room. It's the way you can galvanize people to play for you, and explain your visions and have those things come to life with the people underneath you. And the way that Dan does it is simply with his authenticity, and I think a lot of people, when he had that press conference in 2021, his first as Lions coach.
I was
They
going to
sort of
bring
looked
that
at it
up,
like,
by the way.
yeah,
Everybody
well, I mean,
does,
they looked
right?
at it like, is this guy for real? You know, biting kneecaps, but like it, that's who he is, man. Like he loves football, like to his core, he loves football. Like probably after his family, the only other thing in his life that like, you know, consumes him. And but what he is behind closed doors is exactly what you see on TV. And so he's comfortable with any shortcomings he has. You know, he is himself when he speaks. He doesn't write things down. He speaks from the heart. I think those, and as a former player, like a lot of what he sees and the way he preaches it and the players that he's brought in have been, you know, in that vision. And so there's just this like this bond with him and the city and the players and the organization that I've never seen among all those coaches that I've covered before.
Well, the biting the kneecaps thing, I harken back to, look, I haven't had to look at it. We have one coaching search here, really. The Billick thing I was in on with David Modell. He told me he was hiring Brian. I flew to Minnesota to be there when they lost. Like, I knew Brian was getting hired. There was no process in that. There was a real process here when John happened, and it was Jason Garrett's job. I don't, you probably remember that, and anybody here would remember that Jason Garrett sort of said, now I'm going to go back to Dallas because Jerry's going to make me a man there. But Steve was in love with Jason Garrett and wound up picking John Harbaugh out of a pack of other people. And, and then I went on the, well, I know his brother, so I called Jim and I was like, called Baldinger in Philly. And I'm like, what do you know about this guy and who played for him and who could I get into, who, like all of that. What did you know about Dan Campbell? I mean, you're as wired, you are the Wired Lions guy, you're the Hall of Fame. Like, you hear this guy's going to be the next coach. It's your first thing is, who knows him? What do we get to, what's he do?
Well, you know, the good thing, I guess, was that he did play for the Lions, and he played, you know, 6, 7, 8. Wasn't, you know, the 2008 season when the Lions went winless. You know, Dan was hurt the entire year, so he wasn't around. I actually covered the team. 2008 was my first full season covering the team. I wasn't at the Free Press then; I was at the Suburban Chain of Papers. But, you know, I knew some people that he had played with, so he was. I didn't know Dan, but he was a familiar name to me, and I knew a lot of people that he had played with just from having covered the team for a long, long time. I think the one thing about Dan, and you know, this probably goes for any walk of life, and maybe it's the same, you know, in Baltimore, I suspect it is, with all the success that they've had, you know, is that it's about the people. You know, if you have the right people in place and the right people for your organization, your business, whatever it is, people that believe in the same sort of core values, that have the same vision, like I think this experiment that the Lions did with putting Dan and Brad Holmes together, having never met before, you know, sort of identifying these values that they wanted their team to be about, finding guys that had them, the passion, the compatibility, the willingness to work together. That's what it's taught me more than anything, is like when you have the right people in place, you can do really good things. And I do think the Lions have good people in place right now. And everyone that I spoke with back in 2021 about Dan said that. They said he was just a genuine guy. You know, he's a football guy through and through, but, you know, he was going to do things his way, and he was going to treat people right while doing it. And I think that's proven to be the case.
It's been amazing how the success that former players, even at a, college level like a John Harbaugh, just players see things differently. And then the Mike Vrabels and, guys that played it, and even Tom Brady trying to like run things. Football's such a, I don't think fans could ever understand unless you're in it a little bit. And I think they've tried to pull back in all of these organizations and all the Hard Knocks and all of the things that fans could see. And then the analytics part of this and the film stuff, all of that goes into it. It is, you got to love it, man, and you got to sort of be born into it. You can't just learn it at 30 or 40 and say, I'm going to go code. It's like playing guitar when you're a kid to be really good at it,
You know, Dan said something after the Lions last game, after that playoff loss to Washington, like, you know, he wears his emotion on his face, you know, and you could see how much it was eating him up. And, you know, he was sort of choked up, and he said something about like, I mean, you just don't understand like players and their body, and it's beat to hell, and like what they go through, and like, you know, the appreciation he had for his team in that moment, like them having lost and how much he felt he let them down by not winning. Like, man, just if you have a minute to go back and watch like that segment, that spoke volumes to me, because that was really, you know, it was powerful. Just like the connection that he had with those players, and maybe that where that bond all started from his playing days, because he understood what they went through. He understood the, you know, on just a real personal level, like the everything that you put into it, trying to win a Super Bowl and to not do it and to fall short, and just how deflating that was to him in that moment.
Dave Burkett is here. He is in Detroit, Motor City, Motown, where high hopes led to big disappointment. Kind of like our town, kind of like Buffalo, kind of like anytime you think you're good enough to win and you don't. One more requiem on your season, the injuries, right? I mean, just like in a general sense, this will always be. And if you write the book next year, year after that, and they actually win and you write Honolulu Blue Rain, I don't know what it would be called. You have to come up with a name for that one. The Campbell Expressway, whatever it would be, the Campbell Way. That this year would be looked at as stepping stone, this disappointment and all that. A little different than here, where they went in healthy, Andrews dropped the ball, like made some mistakes. Like, I think the lines, I don't say excuses, but there's a reasoning behind 18 injuries, man.
Yeah, and look, I don't know how much those did or didn't play a factor in that playoff loss. You know, like, to me, that was Washington was a better team on that day. And look, if you have Aiden Hutchinson and Aleem McNeil and Derek Barnes and some of those, you know, defensive players that were out, maybe that's not the case. Maybe you have more of an answer for Jaden Daniels. But you know, the Lions didn't play well that game. Jared Goff had four turnovers. There are a lot of things that went into it. But yeah, the story of the season. We went 15-2, franchise record for wins. I mean, tied for the most in the NFL. And they did it while having just a crazy amount of injuries on the defensive side of the ball, and particularly in the front seven. And look, that's nothing new. I mean, injuries happen in the NFL, right? The Packers a decade ago won the Super Bowl with 16 players on IR and seven starters. But when you look at what the Lions did defensively and the losses they had to overcome, they lost three of their four starting defensive linemen to injuries. They lost three of their top four linebackers. They lost their best cornerback. So really, the as much success they had this season, this year will be remembered for the obstacles that they overcame in getting there, and then maybe how that impacted the end result and them not being able to finish the job and get to New Orleans.
You know, we have the different thing here, right? I mean, four or five times up the mountain, losing a championship game at home. You can't beat Kansas City. You can't beat Buffalo when it matters. You can't win in January when it matters. You make mistakes when it matters. We have a different right going on here, and we got the best player on the planet. So, I mean, there's a whole different level of what you're witnessing in Baltimore. What do you make of it from afar as a national football writer?
Yeah, and look, my brother-in-law is a huge Ravens fan. Okay, so I see it from family in some way. You know, like I think Lamar is as much as anything a victim of like playing in the same conference with the best quarterback of this generation. You know, Patrick Mahomes. Like, to me, it's that simple. Josh Allen is running into it in some ways. You know, Lamar Jackson has run into it in some ways, and I know, you know, he didn't lose to Mahomes and the Chiefs, but like that's the biggest impediment to Baltimore success in my eyes is what the Chiefs have been able to do because they just have a unicorn at quarterback. And Lamar is a unicorn in his own right. And Josh Allen, I mean, all three of those guys, as I look ahead, they're all probably Hall of Famers, right? They're the best quarterbacks of this era right now that are playing. But, you know, Mahomes has just been able to do something special combined with the you know what the Chiefs have built there. Andy Reid, that defense, Steve Spagnuolo, Chris Jones, you know, Travis Kelce. They have a lot of Super Bowl caliber parts that they've just put together at the right time. I think that I don't think this is about Lamar not being able to get it done in the postseason, or you know, maybe early in his career there was some of that. But I think as much as anything, it's just the Chiefs are they're a dynasty.
You make mistakes in January, you pay for it. I mean, period, no matter who you are. I mean, it's but the injury part of your team in Detroit and the full health here, I don't know what it will take for them because I don't think they could be any healthier. I thought the Derrick Henry thing was a stroke of brilliance. I think their DVOA and first down, all the metrics, all of the science that goes into this, even the fact that the kicker, you know, struggled a little bit and the defense struggled on the backside, it is a little bit like, what is it going to take here? And we've won a couple of championships. I don't know what it would feel like in Buffalo or Detroit for the fans, you know?
Right. No, and you know, I mean, it takes me back to what Dan Campbell said after the Lions lost in the playoffs last year. You know, like everyone thinks you're going to get back, right? Everyone thinks you're going to be there when you have a season like the Ravens did this year, like the Lions did this year. You sort of assume, like, yeah, man, we're going to the Super Bowl. I know Lions fans here that book tickets like during the season for the Super. They spent thousands of dollars on Super Bowl tickets. They booked Airbnbs in New Orleans and hotel and flights and everything, right? That's how convinced they were that the Lions were going to get it done. And really, it's so hard to win in the NFL. And that's what Dan said after that game last year, was that he told the locker room, like, hey, this may be your one and only chance. Like, don't make it be that one, right? You got to come back. Everything has to go right. You can have a really, really good team. One mistake happens, one injury happens, one little slip up, one call by a referee that happened to the Saints against the Rams in, 2018 or whatever that was. One little thing can cause you to not make it through your goals, and so you have to cherish every opportunity that you have.
You're going to vote on the Hall of Fame. Yanda, Smith, Suggs in the mix with all the rest of this. Give me a little philosophical thought on how you go and how you vote. You're one of the younger voters, but you've been on a long time. You've been on a decade at this point, and Baltimore's tuned into it a little bit here on behalf of the players.
Yeah, no, look, I think, by and large, when you get talked about in that room, you probably have a pretty strong, Hall of Fame case. So all of those guys are certainly, worthwhile, candidates. For me, I view a Hall of Fame player as someone that I would consider among the best players in the discussion to be the best player at his position during that era. And I, more than a 1 year wonder, doesn't have to be a 10 year stretch, but if you're talking about Marshall Yanda being one of the best interior linemen for, the better part of 5 years, like, to me, that makes somebody a Hall of Fame player. Okay. If you're that in the NFL, then you are in the discussion for the Hall of Fame for me. So I think all those guys sort of rise to that caliber. I would have no problem voting for any of those guys. I mean, just to be frank, we've had our vote already. It's structured a little bit different this year, than it has been in years past, but, yeah, I think all three of those guys have the goods to be in Canton at some point here in the very near future, maybe even this year.
Well, I'll miss you at the game next week. Kansas City, Philadelphia. Some point there'll be a Buffalo, Detroit for all of us. We were all pulling for you, man. You'd be working your ass off right now, like not like you're not already, right?
That'd be that's what everybody was thinking this year, man. Some new team was going to step up and win one, Buffalo and Detroit. Yeah, that'd be the Rust Belt Super Bowl, I guess, but be a
Got
whole
anything
lot of
on
ties
Andrews
between
not
the two
showing up at the
cities.
podium as a reporter?
With Mark Andrews after the game?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, let me put it like this. Yes, I would love, for him to be there. I didn't even realize he didn't do that. I think I appreciate the people that do. You know, I mean, I appreciate the people that's got to be the toughest thing in the world, right? To step in front of the cameras and, talk about all the mistakes and acknowledge what happened and face the music. And when people do that, when they make a crucial mistake and they stand in front of their locker and they take those questions from the reporters, I mean, as a reporter, you don't like asking those questions. Nobody relishes going up to you and saying, hey, what about that mistake, man? Like, how'd that happen? Right. But when people stand in front of their locker and do that, like, man, that tugs at your heartstrings a little bit because you know how much it hurts them too. And so I appreciate the players that do that. Probably a little bit more than, hold it against the players that don't.
Yeah, I think as long as we've been at it, we've all been bad locker rooms, bad losses, big wins. We know everybody's a good winner. That's what I wrote. Everybody wins well. People lose. I learn a lot about, accountability and how they're handling it and how much it matters in a lot of ways. So Dave Burkett is here. He's going to vote for the Hall of Fame this week. He's going to cover the Detroit Lions probably forever until they win or else him and Kid Rock too. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore. Come out and see us for a cup of Super Bowl next week. Hang in there with us.